times is the time. Among us, especially visitors with something important to share with us. Thanks a lot for this opportunity. Thanks, members, to allow us to meet today. If you chose to go elsewhere, we won't be having this meeting. Committee meetings are run when quorum does exist. Today we're going to start the meeting with AIP. Am I right? Is this AIP? Per schedule, we are supposed to meet ICTU. But the report is that they are nowhere to be found. So we'll have to meet AIP, and after that, do other things. So that's how the program stands. And after the engagement, they will do a few things that we're supposed to do as a committee. Honorable Tolashe is on her way to Parliament. That's the only apology I have. So she will join us in a few minutes. I think members did receive the presentation from AIP, where the approach will be that we have whoever is nominated by AIP to talk to the presentation. Because I think the main thing is to engage and then develop a way forward. If there are answers required, we'll deal with those we can deal with, but others will have to be to take some process to deal with them. I'll request that the phones are in a mode where we cannot hear if they are not switched off. And generally, when there are urgent matters that we are waiting for, if it's on a mode that we cannot hear, then you are free to sneak out to respond to that. I know here are people who are responsible for the country, both from AIP and committee members. So we'll take that route, members and our guests. I've welcomed you. Members agree that you make a presentation or talk to the presentation that was circulated. And then after that, they engage. I can only introduce myself as Humphrey Maqhagwana. And the gentleman there sipping a cup of coffee is Mr. Kalako, Lerumo Kalako. Next to him is Velma Dutton. Next to Velma is Pumzile Van Dam. Um, Next to him is Mr. Davis. Next to Mr. Davis is Van Dijk. And next to Van Dijk is Honorable Ndlozi. And those are the members in this committee. And this committee always, when talking about Honorable Ndlozi, feel proud that, and it's a challenge to all of us, that he's now Dr. Ndlozi. So it's a challenge to all of us, even gray as we are, we can still get there. Those are the members, and we have support staff from the Committee of Communication. Honorable Fanda, you wanted to introduce you more than what I've done?
No. No, Chair. Before we start, before you hand over to our guests, I just wanted to be clear and also just have it on record, because this was a meeting we're supposed to have with the so-called SABC 8 and the MAU. What happened to them?
Oh, okay. Okay, last week we tried by all means to chase ICTU, and the report is that they are not found. SABC BIMAU, let me talk about BIMAU. BIMAU, the response was that it's no longer necessary. They are engaging with the board. SABC 8, same thing? Or they never responded. But all those people, they were given time last week to respond and to be here today. Others said they don't have any issues with us. SABC 8, they couldn't be found for them to respond to us. And I think we've written to them, we've given them the dates and all of that, so the ball is in their court. We can't spend the year trying to get people. Thank you very much. Over to you, AIP.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to everybody.
Good morning.
My name is Mbali Dloma. I am the president of the AIP, an organization that represents community publications throughout the country. We've got over 250 publications that are our members, and we lobby for them. Being publishers ourselves, we do the work. We do the work for ourselves and also for other publishers in the country. We just want to thank you first for agreeing to meet with us. It's a pity that we were not scheduled, but we are glad that we got to step into this room, and we hope the engagement that we'll have today will benefit. We will get some way forward, as the Chairperson has alluded. I am going to first introduce our team. I think because I can't see further, I will ask that people shout their names. I've said my name. I'm from KwaZulu-Natal. I run two publications, three isiZulu newspapers that circulate in Durban, and another one in Newcastle.
Thank you very much, everyone. My name is Fanelo Masebo. I'm a board member of the AIP, and I run a newspaper called Lokshi News based in the Vaal in the community of Everton.
Sanmonani, Ngumasindo, I'm KZ from Elza KwaZulu newspaper in KZN.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Patrick from Cape Press News, a Western Cape board member.
Hi, good morning. My name is Kubas, Northern Bulletin, part of IIP. Thank you.
Good
Good morning. My name is Trunsan. I'm from Lupopo. I'm the publisher of Xitsonga newspaper called Thabela that's distributed in Mopane and Bembe. Thank you.
Hi, morning. My name is Mahmoud Sangle. I publish the Muslim Views in Cape Town, but we distribute nationally.
My name is Wandile Fanang. I'm a publisher of Skawara News and also managing director of an online publication called Dagasele and publisher of a company called Skawara Publishers Xhosa for Xhosa Books.
Good morning. My name is Tom Nkosi. I'm coming from Mpumalanga Province, but I'm also a member of the AIP board. My newspaper is called Ziwapi, distributing in Mbombela, as well as the Hlanzeni municipality in Mpumalanga Province. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Brent Sassman. I'm a print partner representing Paul Coltset. I print for these esteemed publications.
Good morning, my name is Noshat Khan. I publish a entertainment and lifestyle newspaper in Cape Town for the next 48 hours.
Thank you very much for those introductions. And as you can see, it's a wide range of publishers who are here. We come from all over the country. And the language, the diversity of language that is in this room is broad and it's amazing. And it just attests to the role and the importance. We feel we are very important as the community media sector because we play a role of sending out, of giving out information to communities, whether they are in rural areas, whether they are in urban areas, whether they are in townships. We are there at the grassroots, which is why we call ourselves the grassroots media, because we talk to the people who really need the information, which in some instances mainstream media doesn't cover. That is the role that we play in our community. The reason why we are here today is, firstly, it's the third time I'm here. The third time I'm talking to communications portfolio members, and I'm seeing different faces each time. It's only Tembi Nkosi which I recognize because I've dealt with him on these three occasions. And it's unfortunate that when we come here, we always talk about one and the same thing, which is the challenges that is faced by the community media sector when it comes to support. And with support, we are not talking about handouts. We are talking about support where we know support is due to us. For example, we talk about the GCIF. We know GCIF has got a budget, but that budget is not reaching us. The challenge that we face as well is what we will call fraud that we've seen happening at GCIS, which we raised, but nothing has happened. We raised that in March this year, and we've constantly been doing follow-ups to find out how far the investigation has gone, but still nothing is happening. We deal daily with SUCA, challenges in SUCA where we propose, we are promised, but nothing happens. And it's state-owned enterprises, the body that handles them. So it's a variety of issues that we deal with. And when we talk about the death of community media, we are on the brink of that. And it's not because people are lazy. These are business people who are seated around the table. We run publications. We sustain them in situations which you would not believe, which is why today I think the most important thing, besides the presentation which you've got on email, the most important thing which we felt we should do today is just give realities. Each person has his own story, her own story to tell, and we discussed amongst ourselves that, yes, the presentation is fine, it's okay, but let's talk about realities. Let's talk about what is happening on the ground. And once we have given a brief summary of what we feel is happening there, then we should come up with proposals, because we did draft what we feel should be happening to this sector. So I will move the platform and ask possibly Tom to start and just do a short presentation on what is on his mind about the sector.
And Tom, I'm not sure, as you contribute, I know you are a board member and all of that. I'm saying, as we talk, remind us, because that introduction, the quick introduction, doesn't sink. So you'll do that, Tom.
Yeah, thank you. Once more, I'm Tom Nkosi. Basically, how we are structured, the association, obviously, it represents a number of these publications, over 250 of them around the country. Actually, I think there's a map that has been circulated which shows just the spread of the newspapers around the country. In a month, we serve about 26 million people. So we have representatives in every province, so who are members of the board. But the main issue, or one of the issues that we are trying, or the main purpose we are here, we would like to see this portfolio committee, you know, paying attention on issues affecting the community media sector. So very often the community media sector is confused with some of the so-called community newspapers which are distributed, particularly by private institutions such as your Kingston newspapers. But to us, they still form part of the mainstream media. So we are in the grassroots. So basically, we are saying there are stories which are supposed to be told. There's culture that is happening there, which is ignored by the mainstream media, and which stories some of the people would never have found even a representation in any form of media. So what we are trying to do is to sustain that particular voice. And then we are experiencing daily problems. Number one, because the advertising industry, which is the lifeblood of any newspaper or publication, is not transformed, and therefore community newspapers are finding it difficult, for example, to get advertising from them. And then where we were our expectations are lying, particularly, which is our government, which has made several commitments on a regular basis. And some of those commitments, if you'd recall, when Jimmy Manyu was still the head of the GCIS, promised 30% advertising that will be going towards the community media sector. That promise never materialized. But in addition to that, we continuously serve these communities. We are in these communities. You find government advertising in mainstream newspapers like your Sunday Times for things such as social grants. And we are in these communities. Our newspapers, most of them are free. They actually distribute more in those communities than your mainstream media. But we are continuously being snapped. And these are the challenges that have brought us here. And this, so what we, how we look at the media, at the media industry or the media in South Africa, we see it being divided into three tiers, mainly your public, your private, and your community. So now the focus mainly has been on the public, which we all know, and we've seen how this portfolio committee has actually been working to try to correct what was happening there. And the only time, obviously, maybe we've heard of the private sector, it's where
maybe issues such as media tribunal are coming to the fore. But there are challenges that have yet to be looked into, namely, among others, the monopolistic nature of this sector. For example, when it comes to printing, they are monopolizing printing. When it comes to distribution, they are monopolizing distribution. So basically, it makes difficult. So we want to hear the voice of our lawmakers as it relates to these issues. How are we going to see this transformation taking place there to make sure that the space opens for us? And then when it comes to the community media sector, I think the most significant we have seen coming out of Parliament was the establishment of the Media Development and Diversity Agency, which is supposed to be funding the establishment of community voices. And however, we've seen that even that it's either inadequately funded, or at least it treats the print side of things as the distant cousins rather than your radio or broadcasting side of things. So these are the challenges that we're facing. We're saying, is it not time that we start to speak to this? Because what we have seen, apart from the 30% that had been promised to us, there are a number of institutions, among others your IEC, and then you have asked about what is SUCA. Actually, SUCA is a very interesting organization. It's a state-owned enterprises communications association. So basically, communicators in state-owned enterprises came together and formed this particular organization. And this organization is either it's more or less something like your GCIS of state-owned enterprises. And now this is a structure we've been trying many times to engage without success. At times, actually, we had to even fly people to Pretoria to attend a meeting. And on the day of the meeting, they told us, sorry, we're not available. So But the types of challenges that we are facing, for example, we'll make an example about SANRAL. SANRAL, which was one of the founding members of SUCA, we approached them and to request them to participate in advertising in the community newspapers. And then what they would do, then they would appoint their own private agencies. And those private agencies are the ones who are making it difficult for the community media sector to access. So it becomes difficult because we are expecting that these government institutions, at least they should be the ones who are advertising, because we are publishing their media releases. Actually, we become very important when they give us media releases, when they invite us to press conferences, because, I mean, we go there in numbers, and then they are able to show the politicians that there's a media representation and so forth. Their stories are published, they make press cuttings and so forth. That's where it ends. When it's time for advertising, then they think of your Sunday Times, your Sowetans, your independent newspapers, and not the community media sector. So this is making it difficult. Now, if you take into consideration the number of publications that we are printing every month, we are creating jobs. We feel that we are having an important role, apart from the communication, which we feel that is important in terms of information dissemination, because we feel democracy, for it to thrive, these voices have to be heard. We usually call ourselves as people who ring the bells before people's grievances become a revolt in those communities. That's how far I can go now. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Praton.
Yeah.
Maybe Wara can just do, Wara is from the Eastern Cape, he can do a short piece as well.
Oh, okay, thank you. My name is Wandi Lefana. I'm from Tsofuvaba in the Eastern Cape. it's not my first time being in Cape Town. The things are very, very beautiful. City, but I'm just astounded with the poverty.
As compared to
Kofimbaba. But I'm just astounded with the poverty that I see here. And it's quite scary. I hope you guys are not sensitized to it. You know, maybe because maybe in Kofimbaba we don't have the rubbish bins where many people eat, and it's not all right. It's not dignified. I'm here because of dignity. Where I come from, newspapers, especially print, have played a very big part in our role since from over 100 years ago. We've had several newspapers, especially Xhosa newspapers, circulating in our area, and it is only now that during our freedom that now these newspapers are dying and our dignity is being compromised. We have newspapers from seasoned journalists, Otadu Kojan, who had newspapers in the 60s, went to jail, went to Robben Island, went to exile, you know, who had ran newspapers for over 60 years. And only now to give up when it's time for democracy. Yeah. And media in our communities plays a very, very important role. The fundamental difference between us and mainstream media is that the mainstream media serves the market and we serve a cause. That's the main difference. And it's so uncanny and so sorrowful that you actually do not see this, because it lays in your hands to actually distribute fairly to where things are supposed to be. You cannot feed the dragon that's already full, which is what I see is happening here in Cape Town. You're feeding what they already fed. So it's quite a very, very pitiful situation. I mean, now we are in a bound to lose with the oldest newspaper in South Africa, the Crocodile Mail, one of the first papers in South Africa. It's going down. Papers that are over 100 years old. I mean, can you imagine those archives? They even ran the last Makoma War. They have archives of the last Makoma War, the annual North Weekly and the Cradle Chronicles. Although they might have represented the other side, but still those are company newspapers. Now they have closed down. And to us, it's not maybe because of the emergence of the digital era, but it's the lack within the government itself in able to source the right funding where it's supposed to be. And especially, as Mrs. Mbali said, we're not asking for sympathy or whatever, you know, we're asking to do for you guys to do the right thing. I think I'll rest my case.
Mr. Fana. Next to you is Mr. Mahmoud Sangle. He is our former president at the AIP. I would just wish for him to say a few words as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair of AIP, and with due protocol to the chair of this committee. Just to contextualize what my colleague on my right had said earlier regarding the history of some of the publications. There is a publishing narrative, there's a professional narrative, but there's also a very personal narrative when it comes to the work that has been done by many of these community publishers. And the one I can best speak to is my own publication. Muslim Views was originally published in 1960. So we have a history of 57 years. It is the only newspaper in South Africa, including mainstream publications, where the editor was detained, was tortured, and and was murdered in detention. It is the only newspaper in South Africa that can rightfully claim to be the first to appoint a woman as editor. That was in 2003. When I was editor, I went for a fellowship abroad, and we appointed a woman who was ironically then scooped up at that time by Oprah magazine. A year later, the Mail and Guardian appointed Cyril Hafaji as editor. Ever since then, they've claimed to be the first to appoint a woman as editor. Now, this is a inside narrative I'm giving you, but it's an idea of the nature of the kind of credentials AIP publications can lay claim to. And to have an industry that has as its cousins and its stepsons and stepdaughters being marginalized and ignored by the powers that be in this country is indeed a travesty. For us to come here today, and as our chairperson has indicated, it's not the first time. When I was chair of this organization, I've also been here three times. And each time, different faces and undertakings being made. And years later, and I remember, 11 November 2011, that's the day that the announcement was made that 30% of government ad spend will be allocated to community media. With so many years down the line, what has been delivered? I'd like to end my case.
No, continue, so that you finish.
Next to him is Donisani. He's from Limpopo. He's a publisher from Limpopo. If he can also say a few words about what he feels about today.
Thank you.
It looks like it's not working. Can you? Honorable Sunday, can you borrow him that way?
Next one.
actually wait for the question and answer session, I guess, and then I'll answer that. Except to say that what you find, to simplify it, is that every time, you know, that, you know, our newspapers are recognized by government and everybody else, you know, when it gets to press releases and stories and stuff like that, and when it gets to advertising, then we found one thing. Then the goalposts get shifted. Then we get told that we only come out once a month, or our circulation is too little, or something is wrong. And that is a bit of a conundrum. I don't know how to explain that. You know, for the rest of the other part, then it's okay. Then we suddenly meet all the criteria, but when it gets to the placement of adverts, be it corporate or government, then there are certainly questions raised about our credibility type of thing. Thank you.
My name is Fanelo Masego, again from the farm, also a publisher of a provincial newspaper called the Yorkshire News. What I would like to add is that briefly, we as community media, we are the diversity that the government boasts about when you're talking about media diversity. But still, we are the diversity that the same government fails to support when it comes to advertising spend. And I'm saying that because the government agency, which was initiated by government, which is the MDDA, their funding is not enough to support community print. When you go to the MDDA, you'll find that only community radio receives a huge chunk of their budget as compared to community print. So we're not saying that is wrong, because we are happy when community media is supported, whether it's radio or print. But what we are trying to say is that we would love to see a situation whereby there is that balance in terms of supporting community print. In terms of supporting community media in general, so that as well as print, we are also met halfway in terms of support and stuff like that. But as we are here, we are not here to come and point fingers and cry and say government this and that and that and that. But we are trying to create a relationship that will see us being part of creating a solution for our issues, the issues that we encounter on a local level where we publish our community. And I think one of the problems that we have is that most people, especially our government, fails to distinguish between actually what is community media and local media. So I will try briefly to distinguish that community print media is a kind of print media that is independently owned by people living in the community. Like I say in the dark history of Sibuke, I was a journalist by profession. I worked for a number of national newspapers, Sunday Times, the City Press, and then I decided to go back home and start my own publication. And in so doing, I'm empowering the youth that are based in my community. And some of the people that I empowered in terms of giving them internships, some of them are now working for ENCA, some of them are working for Daily Sun, some of them are actually represented in the national media. So the problem we have is that the government fails to distinguish between community and local. We have local newspapers which are called the captains, your commercials, your indeed. Those publications are owned by captains. They are not community newspapers, they are local newspapers, because they are owned by somebody sitting somewhere in a flagship office in Cape Town or in Johannesburg, and these are market opportunities in Soweto, and he gets into that market, and he brings a newspaper that is full of adverts, but lacking the content of the people living in those communities. So our publications are actually rich in terms of reporting the joys, the hardships, the challenges of ordinary people living in communities that would not normally actually appear in a national publication or television station. So I think the problem we have is that here in South Africa, the kind of leadership that we have is not the leadership people, I mean, our leaders are not, I mean, I'll start by Jimmy Bani because he's the one who started with this 10% thing. They are not managing by walking around their entities and ensuring that whatever that they spoke is actually implemented. But their management style is only about talking on media platforms, but not necessarily ensuring that whatever that they talk is actually implemented on the ground level. So that's the main problem we have. A politician will come and say community media needs to be supported. But when you go to a department like SASA, like IEC, they have never seen any support from the IEC. You go to them, they take the same business and they take it back to national media. They don't support their community media. Right now, they are running a campaign now for people to re-register and check their status so that they are registered with the IEC. We are not part and parcel of that campaign. None of our publications are receiving any support from them. So what we are saying is that we would love to have a situation whereby this committee recognizes our association and you adopt us and take our ideas so that we become part and parcel of creating a solution for community media. Otherwise, if we are not going to assist us, most of us are going to close doors.
And those young people that are based in townships are going to lose their jobs. They are going to lose those training opportunities that you provide for them to thrive in the media sector. I thank you.
Thank you, Fanelo. Lastly, I just want to call on Noshad Khan. If you can just say a few words. Noshad is based in the Western Cape. He publishes a newspaper. He's also online. But he's also a former board member of the ANP. If you can just say a few words.
Thank you. Madam President, as a member of AIP, I must, I think, tell this gathering that the work that the elected members do to try and push the agenda for independent publishers is one of a hard slog because of the raw deal that independent publishers have in a media landscape that is highly monopolistic. It's one that hasn't transformed in the last 25 years, and to try and break that is difficult. So sitting here today and pleading for most probably the 10th time to a committee like you is just another voice of those 250 odd publishers that wants to be a part of changing the media landscape in South Africa. I just want to just share that in the mainstream, digital media seems to be right up on the top of everybody's minds. But I think as people in the industry and as decision makers that you guys are, it is very important to understand that printed media was not an opportunity given to the masses of South Africa in the past. Currently, with 250 publishers that are pushing out almost 8 to 9 million copies of printed material to this new audience is an opportunity. And to say that print is dying, it might be an international thing, but in South Africa, it's still an audience that's finding ways to appreciate their stories through printed material. And for me, I just want to end by saying that print in South Africa has got a long way to go, and the support that the industry requires from all stakeholders is important, because the stories that will shape our community, our nation, is still to be told. We're still a young democracy, and I think this sector has an important role to play in shaping that future that we want. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moshe. Lastly,
We've got a print partner here. This is a company that prints most of our publications throughout the country. We print with them in Maritzburg, and some of our publishers print with them in Gauteng. And I think there is a printing plant here in the Western Cape. If Brent could just say a few words about the relationship that he has with us and the challenges that he sees, because I think for them, it's printing us. Maybe they print us for 3 years, and then the paper suddenly disappears. So those are the types of challenges and what is they see on a frequent basis. So Brent, if you could just say a few words.
Morning, everyone. I didn't actually intend to say anything. I just meant to observe and show support. But if I am going to say something, then it will be the testimony of how hard these people work and the challenges that they face. I've walked almost a 10-year road with a number of people in this room when I started in the industry. And I've seen them not grow and move from strength to strength, but really just strive against the dying of the light. They've got a lot of heart. I don't see them as coming here to beg. I see them as coming to plead a case in terms of the value that they add to the media landscape. Their biggest challenge is just being able to print regularly. The success of a newspaper rises and falls on its frequency and its distribution, because their model is to generate revenue from advertising through the audience that then spends their rands with the advertisers, or in this case, let's say it's government, who goes and then takes advantage of whatever government's programs are out there. So they are a vital communication tool for everyone within the industry, the retailers, other brands, and particularly government. Perhaps just a question. What is it that you'd like to see us or see them present to you that will help you assist them? If they're not ticking all the boxes, then what would that be? Just a simple question as an outside media print partner. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we've covered everybody that we wished to have a say and just give input to our presentation today. And as we wrap up the presentation, I know there'll be question and answers, but for now, we did say we will present and then propose some sort of way forward on what we wish to see happening in this sector. And I think when we said and we discussed, we drew 3 points which we felt we should present to you today. The first one is we wish the community, the committee, to investigate the lack of support that we are experiencing from government. And there, we are not saying, as most of us are saying in this room, we are not saying we need handouts. But when we know that the budget for GCIS, for instance, is 500 million rands per annum, at least that 30%, when they say it should be going to community media, it should go there. And at least if that 30% is shared amongst the sectors which are print, radio, and electronic, then there should be a slide for print. And it should be noted somewhere, and it should be, it should happen. It should not just be that it's spoken about and then a year passes, we come back and we talk the same language. Because when we ask for statistics from GCIS on the allocation of the budget, each year print is lacking. Print, as you see on the presentation, sometimes gets 5 million rands, and that is for 250 publications. The budget is there, the budget is stipulated, the budget is 500 million rands, and we just need a slice of that as the print sector. So our wish is to have this committee investigate what is happening at GCIS, why is there this lack of support from the print, from the community print media sector. The second request is that
come to you as government, why we focus on government is because of the challenges that we face when we go to commercial assets, when we go to commercial advertisers. You go to your local shop, you go to your spa, you go to Checkers for insertions, they tell you no, we do insert in a community media, whilst they are talking about local publications, like your folk, which are publications that are owned by Kexton. And that is a challenge that we face. We are not lazy people. Look in our newspapers and you'll see the difference. When you put a Kexton paper in front of you and you put our newspapers there, it's all the same. We are challenged by the non-transformation in the advertising sector. There is a challenge there and we feel that the committee should assist because it's over 20 years down the line and there should be a difference. Our communities are the ones that consume Checkers, ShopRite Checkers products. We are the ones who frequent the shops. We are the ones who purchase whatever is sold in those shops. But when it comes to issues of advertising, issues of insertions and so on, those are given to white-owned companies and publications. Lastly, when we spoke as the board, we felt possibly the talking is not getting us anywhere. If since 2011, November, as Mr. Sang Lei has alluded, when the 30% was spoken about, possibly talking we know is cheap, as they say. So maybe it's time for action now. So we spoke about why don't we propose a community media charter where we will have something documented, something which will be passed in parliament, something which will be formal, where if you said 30% plus goes to the community print media sector and it goes there. And there are reporting mechanisms that are put in place for that 30% to see and to monitor that it's implemented at the end of each financial year. So our proposal to the committee is for a community print media charter, which will look into our issues and maybe find and have those issues documented and recorded so that we are old, we are very old. As you can see, we've got gray hairs. So these publications are not going to be run by us forever. But when we leave here, when we hand over to our children, to our partners, we wish to see them sustaining their publications, these publications. We don't want them to die as little death. We fought, so I think at the end of the day, there should be something which happens which will assist that these publications remain even when we are not here. I will end it here now, and if there are any questions, you can just discuss.
Thank you very much. I'm sure members, you listened. But just to isolate one area or point, the 30% issue. You say it's from which year?
November.
But members will remember that it's something that we need to engage the ministry or the minister. It's in our BRRR. Remember when we're discussing the BRRR is there. So we'll have to follow it up so that it's implemented. I'm saying it's one thing that we're dealing with it in this budget review process. What will happen? We don't know. You focus on it? No, not on this one. Because it's us now talking. Then you'll then come back and raise issues. Members, does the report from AIP, although they came individually in terms of presentations, what they think and all of that. Honorable Van Damme.
I've been in this movie before. It's just frustrating. As much as I
of frustrating, I imagine, way more from our guest today, but we've been here for, we had a whole oversized trip about community media. And now the ball is quite frankly in our court. It's now up to us to act. I mean, we're waiting now for the legal opinion on the MDA investigation. Can we have progress on that? And then, I mean, I think we spoke to the last minister as a committee, and we've given her a suggestion that she agreed that a directive must be put out to encourage government departments to spend more on community media. I don't know if that ever happened, but that at least was a resolution from our side, and maybe something on the internet clear in our BRRR report. And I also do think maybe some of the problems are as a result of a high turnover, firstly of ministers and also of staff at the various entities. So that's also something that we must express ourselves on. And then Ma'am mentioned something about food at GCIS. Could you give us a bit more detail about that? So can you provide us with the full details about that so we can take it forward? Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Dose, Honourable David.
Honourable
Dose, Honourable David,
sorry.
This is a bit fun. Thank you very much to our guests. I thought that we perhaps have some obligation to respond to some of the observations. I think that from at least a journalistic point of view, historically, journalism has always been something that exists in a difficult position in relation to society, because it has to be critical to the government, to society itself, but also to capital. So the logic of it being sustained by adverts from the same people is a bit difficult, particularly if it has to be community-based or local-based, because the advert, the way in which it is thought about today is different to how it was over many, many decades ago. That's a challenge, and maybe it's an intellectual challenge to all of us to rethink publications. Is there a different model? And I don't know, I don't have the answer. Because that's on one side. We have this responsibility as a society, as a civilization. Because 80%, that's like historic, it's about 80% of the survival of most publications depends on adverts. They don't get adverts either from government or from the private sector or business. They don't survive. And yet they have to be critical of these entities. And so it's easy to kill them. You just withdraw funding. And the only ones that survive are the ones in which either government or some big fish businesses have shared. And then obviously the big monopolies. Now, I think that the survival of this industry depends on answering this difficult question about is there a different way of a model that could be thought of. Secondly, I do think that there's a problem of local business as well. The local state and the local business. So your ShopRite that they keep mentioning at a local state, your Pick and Pay, your malls, your whoever, all those people, engaging all of them collectively in the process of sustaining something that is a circulation of information. I don't think our people or society is sensitized, South African society is sensitized to that it's important to spend on the mediums that encourage critical dialogue, critical debate, and the raising of levels of consciousness. So there has to be a lot of work as well done from that perspective. And then the final one is that, to be honest with you, at least from us who sit in the opposition benches. We have a big problem of political will with the sitting government. We don't make promises. We are not the government. This is a parliament. So there are two, from a proper, maybe members of the ANC in the committee might have a different perspective, but they are not, unfortunately as well, in a position to say that they are government. They are not. We are parliament and we have to engage with the executive. And to be honest with you, and this is not probably shocking to you, there is a big problem of political will to make the necessary radical transformations. So for instance, that whole situation of 30%, even if it were to be a law, if you were to pass it as a law to say all government expenditure on adverts, 30% of it must go to community media, there will still be a problem of political will to go and implement the law. Those of you who are able to hear me deeply here, I'm saying that that might be a problem for a very long time, until there's a transformation of the will of those who serve the country from a political point of view. It's hard because where our oversights have been, where they throw money, merely throwing money on a publication as well does not guarantee its survival per se. It's a much more complex thing. But those that they give money, you see, it's scandalous. Maybe it's javelin. They throw it on the other side, and they receive on the other. It's publications that are not strong, have not been around for too long, and if you pay much closer attention, maybe you realize that they're either linked to people in MDDA themselves or people in GCIS. And so the final thing I do want to say is that. If we will push, we will make the necessary BRRR pressure, we will make the entire noise in relation to government sticking to its commitment in relation to this. We can promise that at least I know that the other colleagues have the same commitment. But we will report as well in this way. But we've been doing this. We've been telling them that if you do not have the political will, you're not going to change anything. The matter, it's simple like that. It's not complex, not difficult. You have to believe in it. You have to believe that we need community media. Then you have to go and make sure that you create all sorts of structural support. And if you don't have the political will, you're not going to do it. You can't say that we need to resolve the land question if you don't have the political will to resolve it. You can't say you want to resolve corruption if you don't have the political will to resolve it. So this question of political will has to do with a whole set of questions and in relation to the problems that we have. There is very little, we are confronted generally with a big problem of political will to make the necessary. How is it that you haven't changed ownership patterns in South African media over the past 24 years? When you actually have the muscle as government, the capital on your part, you can change those ownership patterns. Diversity, I don't get it. I have to reduce it to political will. And it's unfortunate that you and us are having a conversation literally on the eve of... We might not even have the same minister who's presenting the budget now. We might not have that minister in February when we come back. So again, we are in a turbulent political time. Honorable Fandam is not understating this thing. There's been three ministers of communication. Three. In less than a year. 7 months. So you talk to this one, you say, okay, how about 1, 2, 3, 4? You know, they agree and all of that. Tomorrow they are gone. You have to start with another one now and say, look, these are the commitments and so on and so forth. Now to start to beg the call. So we are also, I'm concluding, Chapeze, we are also in a, that is our problem that we have to tell you and the people of South Africa. It is very difficult to can hold this government accountable because it's changing all the time. Like this government, it's an abnormal situation. But we will try our best, but you have to know the truth. That we all have to stomach as difficult as it is. Thank you very much.
Madam Sunday?
You must first.
No, no. I'm giving you the opportunity to talk. I won't come back that side.
Thank you, Chi. Chi, I will also just want to add to what my colleague, Honorable Van Dam, said on the NDA issue. As you know, I've written two letters already, so I really want to have you give us update on that. And then I went to this presentation that they've given us, and it's really a concern to see that actually from the previous year, the cost or the money available for advertising on community media has went down by 3.5 million print media. And that should raise a concern. And with this presentation that they've given us, they mention here that there's an attachment with the agreements that they had with GCIS. I would like us to have that if it's possible, because it says here that those agreements were not honored. So I'm not sure if it was attached and maybe just left out. And then also, if they can also, it says here, it speaks about the money that was paid over by GCIS to this procurement agency. And maybe if we can get an update of how many of these publishers was actually was to be paid out. And it says here that GCIS paid the money over to this advertising procurement agency, but that company never paid over. So what happened to that company eventually? Did it just went scot-free? So we need to get a follow-up on that specifically also. People need to be held accountable. Previously, it was also mentioned that these advertising brokers are actually damaging the relationship, and they're the big problem, because I think they take the commission or a lot of the money that was is put out by GCIS for their own pockets, and they don't really serve the community media. And also further on the same factor, GCIS apparently also put out plans to replace this advertising procurement tender, and it hasn't been done. It's 2 months later. So I think there's a huge responsibility from our side to maybe ask some questions towards GCIS. But I really also support that we need to look into the matter to see how we can, as a committee, contribute to expand community media, because it's really important. That is the voice of the people after all.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much to the presenters for the work that you've done today and the work that you do in your communities, and for keeping community journalism alive. I think it's something that we all support, and we all want to support you. And we have heard your voice today, and thank you very much for making your voice heard. I just want to try and summarize your argument, if I may, just to make sure that we're on the same page. It seems to me that your argument is that community media is a public good, but you are constrained in delivering this public good because there seems to be a market failure because of the failures of advertisers to come to the party. And in the and because of that market failure, you want the government to correct that market failure, as it is mandated to do through the MDDA specifically. But you are saying that there's a blockage there. And I think that if I get the argument correctly, it's a very powerful argument. I think what's very useful today is that you've come with specifics, with specific recommendations. So what we can do as a committee, we can take your recommendations and look at them in black and white and interrogate them. And I think that that's something that we should certainly put time aside to doing, Chair, on our own time, and to deliberate on your specific recommendations, including the 30% quota, as well as the charter that you've proposed. Before we do that, I'd like to ask you some questions, just so that we're empowered when we go through that process. And I'd like to get your views on a few things. And this is not to be critical of you, but it's just some questions that I have just to help us in our decision-making process. And the first question I have is just to get your perspective exactly on what is happening at the MDDA. And I'm not talking about the current dysfunctionality of the MDDA. Is there a structural problem at the MDDA that prevents it from funding print media? Why is it that the MDA seems to be biased towards broadcasting over print media? I think that's something that we need to get to the bottom of. So that's my first question to you. My second question to you involves the other blockage. If the one blockage is the MDDA, that is the blockage which seems to exist in the private sector, in the advertising industry. Can you tell us what exactly is happening in the advertising industry? There seems to be an inference that decisions on ad spend are taken by advertising execs in the private sector who are far away from communities and don't quite understand the value add that you can bring to the party. Can you explain to us exactly what is going on in the advertising industry and why you find such a blockage there? Because to my mind, surely at the end of the day, money talks. And if advertisers realize that there's a market for their products in those communities, they would advertise, unless it's an information problem that they don't quite understand just how much value you can add. So if you can just give me your perspective on that. Secondly, I'd like to get your perspective on a general problem that isn't just related to community print media, but it's related to print media in general, which is obviously the onset of the fourth industrial revolution. I think it was alluded to by some of you. There is a declining in readership in generally in print media. What are you doing as an organization to try and manage this, the fourth industrial revolution and your place in it? How are you managing? What strategies do you have to survive as the media landscape is changing in the way that it is? And then lastly, there's potentially an interesting paradox at the heart of this, because you are independent media producers, and I think, you know, the first prize for you would be to be completely independent and to be self-sufficient and self-funded. I think that would be your first prize. But you find yourself in a position where you aren't dependent, unfortunately, on state funding. How do you manage this relationship? How do you manage being simultaneously independent in your outlook, but also dependent on the state for funding? What mechanisms do you have to protect your independence, but at the same time asking one source of income for money? I'd like to hear your views on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you all for your presentation. My name is Wilma Nguyen. I am from the Western Cape. I have a few questions. I'm curious about your working relationship between AIP and MDDA. Is there a working relationship existing or not? So you can see the MDDA fund, how much really is allocated to the print media or is none allocated at all? And another question, any funding from provincial and local governments, you know, to community newspapers, is there any kind of funding from provincial and local governments? And do you have a cost breakdown related to that or not? And I would like this committee to again investigate how much of the government spending goes to Caxton. Oh, Caxton. Scripted mistake. You know, they're a big media house. And the government funding, does it go to them? We need to investigate how much of that goes to Caxton, which is a huge media house, and how much is actually going to the community newspapers, and why that, you know, why is it that current case? I think we need to investigate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
have clarified this thing of local newspapers and community newspapers, that sometimes for ordinary people like me, they just think it's one and the same as long as it's local or it's community. But I think now you are giving a clarity, especially because coming from Cape Town, in all our townships, the dominant papers which sometimes are distributed around the place, it's called it's local newspaper. Only to find out they are not independent or owned. They are some sort of subsidiaries of this big publishing companies. But I think you are clarifying. I think what also I was interested in that question also because we encourage distribution and also relaying of information and news without to communities, without any censoring or propaganda or what fair reporting. But if you say you target only the government department for your support, will that not influence your reporting? That's one question I have. I know I can see you are struggling when it comes to resources. Surely private sector, I think to me, they've got their own position in as far as, and I'm sure they might have tried even to take you over, as they have done in other townships in other places. So, your engagement with them, in as far as advertising in the papers, because surely you are commanding millions of people in our own language, which makes it easy and a good access from those retailers to advertise. I want to hear what is their answer when you approach them, when you engage with them as an organization. What are the reasons that they put forward? But on the side of government, you talk about GCIS having also a portion of the money, which is meant to support you guys, but you are complaining that money is, there's no balance in distribution of that money. That's what, if you can just explain that, so that we can be clear when we engage GCIS. And then there was this big problem when we were visiting areas mentioned by many publishers of your site, that most of your resources, the expense, the cost, go in printing. And all those we met were complaining that is what kills. And I think maybe you correct us that there is a monopoly of in printing sector. There's a monopoly. The big companies, and if all of you will have to go through them. So the relation with this, the Cake Team, which is a big company, their relation between them and the printers you are using. The printers you are using, as you are saying now, you have brought Mr. Yeah. As part of who prints for you, comparing their company to Texas, the size and the cost which you as compared to them, because there was that crime, no, the cost are so high, especially when you deal with these guys. So if you can maybe, I'm sure we'll await your proposal. Proposals are fine, but you are suggesting that we must develop together with you with a print media charter. The charters which are there now covering the media. Why are you raising that? Is because there's a loophole that they do not cover your space. So just to actually get from you. So I think some of the other things which you raise, really, as colleagues have said, they are left with us to deal with the department, because that's what we do, to interface with the department so that the department explains to us. And all these issues you have brought in, the case of a fraud, I think Chair will need a concrete information on that in the committee.
Yeah.
Give it to us in writing, concrete case, we'll follow that, definitely. So Chair, I wanted just to raise those issues.
Yeah. Thank you very much, members. I think we left a problem of time now. We've gone 1.5 hours, and there is ICTU after this. We'll have to give them some time before we get to our own issues. So if you can respond in brief, so that we manage the time.
Thank you very much. And we acknowledge the questions that have been raised by the committee. It's a lot of questions. I will try and just summarize them. But I would wish for the support of Tom Fonero, Noshad, and Wara, just to wrap up as well. Okay, I'll start with Mr. Dan's comment. I think, yes, we are pleased to hear you say that you are willing to take this forward as the committee, because we have been raising it for numerous occasions, so we really appreciate that. Quickly on the fraud at GCIF, we went to the office in March, I think this year, with a meeting, as Dusan has said, to attend a meeting with another stakeholder at the National Office in Pretoria. And then we moved to the office at Communications, because we also deal with them regularly in terms of advertising and, you know, following up. And when we got there, the person that we normally speak to, Lisa, was there, and we had a conversation with him about various issues. And then it came to the issue where we asked how far he's gone, because we haven't received advertising support in a long time, whereas we were encouraged to enlist with advertising procurement agencies, which they signed contracts with. So he then responded to us saying, oh, but we gave you work in December. Didn't you get campaigns in December? And then we said no. Dunisani from Limpopo was there, and myself, I can't recall who else was there. But he then stood up and he called one of his officials, one of the people he works with, and he asked them to please open a file which showed that there were campaigns that were ran in December, and Dunisani's newspaper is amongst those publications. And Dunisani said, I never got this campaign. And then Mr. Mlisa said, please could you, asking the official again, please could you give us the proof which we supply whenever we print a campaign, which goes with the invoice. It's either a hard copy or an electronic copy. And in this case, they had sent electronic copies. So the official, the person who works with Mr. Mlisa, gave that, showed us that on screen, and it was Dunisani's paper, or at least supposedly it was Dunisani's masthead. It had Dunisani's new
newspaper name on top, and it was a full page. And that had been paid around December 16. The whole campaign, it comprised of about 10 publications, and our colleague never received that. It was at 10,000 rand per run, per newspaper. So that is the fraud that we uncovered there. We then encouraged Mr. Mlisa to give us answers why this was so, and we left, and he promised that he will speed up the process and ask the service provider what had happened. The service provider is Milele Group, which is an organization we've had an issue with for a long time, since 2012. Milele Group.
Do we have this document? Do you have it?
Which one?
The one that shows that everything was done. How do you have
it? It was on screen.
Ah, okay.
It was on their screen, so we never heard anything in writing.
Yes, okay, fine. Yeah,
But we do have communication where we have been asking back and forth what is happening, what is the latest. And as recent as last week, we got communication from Mr. Mlisa saying Chief Kubi Miti was going to set up a meeting with DTG, the people in management at GCIS. Amongst others, that issue is going to be addressed. So we have had to excuse ourselves because we're coming here. So that issue is still on the table, but our gripe is that they are still using a service provider who is doing injustice to most of the publications, in the sense that he still works with the GCIS. He's still listed amongst the advertising procurement agencies when he should not be there. We have been raising the issue as the AIP and as publishers individually. You will see when you do the presentation, most of the publishers are commenting about Milele Group, because numerous complaints have been raised by publishers with regards to the company, but nothing has been done. It's owned by Mr. Meshi.
I think in relation to this, let's get all the information. This is one thing that we must investigate as the committee. So let's the committee secretary must get all this information, so that we investigate it.
All right, I'll move on. I think that's adequate enough. And then I'll move on to the question on the model that can be used with regards to ethics. There are numerous models that we've tried. There are numerous models that we do try. It's not to say we're not getting local advertising from the local shops and all that. But we see government as an enabler. We see government as a springboard from which we should start. We do work hard for our publications. We do get numerous support from various organizations and government offices. In KwaZulu-Natal, we've just signed an MOU with Ethekwini Municipality. They are going to work with us, and they've committed to a certain budget for those publications that fall under the municipality on a monthly basis. And that is the first of its kind also possibly in the country, where a government office signs such an agreement with the community media sector. So it's not to say you are looking to government specifically and only to government for sustenance. It's just that we look to them because there is a budget. I mean, it would have been different if we were not informed that there is a 30% that should be going to us. But there is that, and where is it going? Why is it not going to us? Why are we having to have this same problem all over again? Especially when there's fraud being committed, especially when they're still allowing organizations or companies like Milele to continue working when we know that those companies should not be there. I think I'll leave this for other colleagues to respond.
As you do that, there is tea and coffee outside. One is free to just grab and come back.
Okay. Can I get in? I just wanted to follow up on what you said before answering only two questions. I'm just going to try and quick. Ms. Fanelo again, Masebo. What I wanted to add on what the president was representing is that person that owns the company is Mesh Kolan. If I'm all right, it's Mesh Kolan. So he might be using a different company, but he's still getting business from the GCIS. One other thing that I want to point out is that the issue of fraud is not the only problem that we have registered. Our members have came up and complained that they were not paid by him for adverts that were placed, whereas GCIS has actually paid him. And there were other instances whereby he was paid before placement. Before placement, he was paid. I have one publisher that came to me and said, this guy, I found out that this guy was already paid before he could even place an advert with me by the GCIS. So there are a lot of shenanigans that are happening in that office, and we'll be glad if we can actually tap into that. But yeah, mine was to just answer Mr. Davis, Honorable Davis, about the question of the advertising industry. I'm just going to try to be brief. You see, the private sector, I think the problem we have with the private sector is that it's a question of old boys with old networks that are actually pushing business for each other and overlooking your black-owned independent publishers. That is the main problem that we have. You know, we've tried. I'll tell you a practical example. My publication, I started my publication in 2009, Lokshin News, in the dusty street of Sibukeng. I don't know, I have maybe over 6 ShopRite usages and ShopRite shops that I distribute in their communities, in their shops around the vicinity where they operate their business. I've got more than 8 pick and pays that I distribute in the vicinity. But I've never gotten adverts from ShopRite, from pick and pay, and from all those areas. You know, I mean, to make matters worse, there is a hostel, a Sibukeng hostel. That hostel, predominantly the people who are living there, speaks isiXhosa. And there is a ShopRite there that speaks there. And instead of ShopRite advertising in a publication that speaks Bantu language like Sisutu, because my publication also speaks, includes Sisutu, they will take that advert to a Capstan and Media 24 owned publication, which is there, and put an advert in English in that publication and distribute it in a hostel that has almost 100% of people living there speaking isiXhosa. So the problem we have is that we have people who are making decisions about advertising for a dusty township in Sibukeng. A person is sitting in an office in Cape Town, and he decides, not knowing who frequents the shop, not knowing how many SASSA beneficiaries are buying from that shop, you know, but they make decisions for that shop. And another problem that we have these advertising agencies that are actually doing everything in their power to block advertising that comes from coming to black-owned independent publishers. That's the main problem we have. I'll tell you a practical example. So one of the that agency is Capro, and I am a member of Capro. I went to Capro because I wanted to benefit from this retail ad. From 2009 till now, I haven't got any retail ad. And one day when I went there, I spoke to one of the black employee and asked him, why is it that our black publications are not receiving retail adverts? And yet those that are owned by white people and those that are based in the suburbs are receiving them. And then this lady said to him, you don't know the fight that I had with my boss. There was a campaign for Johnny Walker advert. And I kept telling my boss that please place this Johnny Walker advert with black township publications. And she flatly refused, saying those people don't have a buying power. They cannot afford to buy Johnny Walker. And to think that in our townships, we don't actually even drink Johnny Walker. We buy it and pour it down. Just to break. That's the culture in the townships.
Remember, you have 10 minutes to go.
So our issue is that...
Just on that. You have 10 minutes.
So the issue here is that...
Not because you mentioned the whiskey.
Okay, I understand. The issue here is that the advertising sector itself is not transformed. It's very racist. It's not looking at blatant issues. And their excuses would be that you are not printing frequency. I mean, I've been printing from 2009 and 2011, but I will still have a person telling me that I doubt your frequency. I doubt that you'll be existing in the next six months. Yet I've been publishing from 2009. So hence we're crying for government, because it's like we have accepted that the private sector is not going to advertise with us. So the only place we can run to is government. That's the reason why we're pushing for government. Thank you.
Okay, and I'll also like to... I'll talk about MTDA. Mr. Davis, we must understand where MTDA comes from. If you remember, the MTDA Act was formed, and then the question was, how will MTDA be funded? And then it was detailed that it would be funded by the then called the print media sector. And then when with the emergency of the independent, the Iqbal, then the print sector broke away itself, and then they stopped funding towards MTDA, which I think because there was also Mr. Lugum Timte, who was calling up for the media tribunal. And then in that case, since then, the MTDA has been in disarray. But I must say so that some of the members of the AIP have received well-needed funding from MTDA, but it's not enough. The funding is not enough. It's not just about the money, just giving the money away. It's also the process, the process that can take sustainability. At the moment in time, I'm sure maybe with the emergence of the new board of MTDA, things will be better. But in itself, for the past 2 years, I don't want to hold any punches. Faith Mutambi destroyed that entity, you know, to its knees, and it's not been really been it's not been really functioning. And so MTDA in itself hasn't really been coming up and really been happening in the past 2 years, because number one, there was not a board correcting. Number two, we had a chairman coming, CEO coming in, and all newspapers and podcasters came all over the country. And they were supposed to be a million for this guy to come and see us and then talk to us, to the media people. And then the following day, the guy resigned. Can you imagine? You know what I mean? I don't know. I mean, it's looting. And then come to what we do with the fourth... the digital emissions. Not a lot, and all, most of us are online as well. Most of all, I mean, we AIP also set up a digital platform called Tekasele, which has been breaking a lot of news lately, and also an investigative unit. I mean, we have ZWAP, so one of the strongest investigative journalists in the online journalism. And then what we do, we also do syndication platform. We also sell the stories to other major newspapers. And for instance, I'm just to give a little run about that. Most community newspapers, that is where the big guys emerge, the big journalists. I mean, for all times, Tankolojiga or Pramzilikaz, they came from the community newspapers, you know? They came from us, you know? So we are not, we are the printers of the industry itself, you know? But then yet we're treated as orphans. That's how it is.
There were a number of questions, but I'm not going to attempt to answer all of them. Honourable Davis, perhaps what we ought to do is to give written response to some of the very probing questions that you've asked. But there was another question, but I think Honourable Volma, if I'm not mistaken, regarding Caxton. Were they a beneficiary of government advertising? And I think there was a report that I tabled to GCIS in September of 2012. I'd like to quickly read from this report. The GCIS publication, Vukuzenzele, was converted from a magazine into a newspaper in mid-2012 for the purpose of enhancing its distribution by inserting it into existing free sheet newspapers. AIP members belonging to a regional KZN structure sent a proposal to GCIS in March 2011, expressing an interest in offering a distribution channel for Vukuzenzele in their member cycles. After several inquiries from the AIP regional structure, they were advised that the distribution of Lucas and Zelia will be placed on tender at the end of 2011. The CEO of the MDDA requested a copy of the proposal in September 2011. The AIP regional structure complied. However, at the MDDA hosted workshop from 16 to 18 May 2012, the MDDA CDO expressed concern that the tender may have been awarded to Caxton, a conglomerate. And that's what we actually discovered that actually happened. Worse still, after Caxton offered some MDDA-funded publishers the opportunity to participate in this initiative, the former nevertheless opted to remain the exclusive service provider for the GCIS. It is noteworthy that Caxton has no HDI shareholding, that it has the worst record of the four conglomerates, the media conglomerates in America, in terms of employment equity. Caxton was also reported by an AIP member to the Competition Commission for at least one charge of uncompetitive behavior. So AIP was astounded that this decision on re-strategizing the distribution of 1.7 million copies of a 20-page newspaper costing 1 million rand to print a single edition was awarded to an entity with the worst conglomerate BEE rating. This begs the question, has GCIS given
any... Is not something that we can get from the ourselves?
Well, yeah, that's basically the conclusion of the paragraph that I'm reading. But the point I'm making is that even GCIS has capitulated to the conglomerate.
Okay. I'll also try to align myself with the proposal by Mahmoud that we submit some of the responses in writing. But I just wanted to say when the investigation is being conducted by the portfolio committee that we also look into the IEC. Very, very briefly, I come from Mpumalanga province. There's a Caxton newspaper there. And the most worrying injustice that happened to the community, particularly during the elections last year, the newspaper that are aligned to this Caxton media house, there are two. Actually, one prints on Tuesday. Sorry, actually, there are three. One prints on Tuesday and Friday, and then the other one prints on a Thursday. And then they have inserts. So what they do, on Tuesday, they advertise in the main paper, and they also advertise in the insert, the same advertisement. On Thursday, they do the same. They advertise in the main paper, and advertise in the insert, the same advertisement. On Friday, there's no insert, they just advertise in the main paper. This was just one, but in all the provincial newspapers, they do the same thing with Caxton, and not a single community newspaper receives such advertisement. And we raise complaints, nothing happens. These are just some of the things that they are doing. GCIS came with the tender last year, and actually they were encouraging us to establish cooperatives. We have established those cooperatives, but the advertising is not coming. It will come once. Actually, in some of the, it's created more problems because you find that you have 10 newspapers registered with the cooperative, and then you find that they select just two. And then when the money starts coming in, it goes to the two newspapers, and all other eight do not get newspapers. So it creates problems. So these are some of the issues, but I align myself that maybe we should submit in writing and hope that action will follow after this. And then also investigate SUCA, because SUCA and SANRAL are our biggest problems. SUCA is the state-owned entity's communication association. I'm worried that this portfolio committee does not know about their existence because we feel that it is a gatekeeping mechanism which was supposed to centralize communication. So now it means we have to have a good working relationship with that centralized structure. So in other words, you will not be able to penetrate state-owned entities as community media, except going through that particular structure.
So if it receives funding from government and this portfolio committee does not know about, it is worrying. Thank you.
Nice to have this proposal as well, so that apart from the responses and everything else, we do have those proposals. The committee takes immediately a decision to say we must investigate the issues around fraud in GCIS. There are names mentioned. And whatever documentation that we can assist us. It will be important that we get that information. Then your office can liaise with Tembikosi so that we get that information. Insofar as the 30%, as I said, it's in our PRRR, we'll have to deal with that so that when we present our PRRR next week or so, we shall have linked up with the minister to, of course she knows that it's the new one, not the the new minister is aware of that 30%, and all what we need to do is to not pressurize but nudge her so that all of us can be in the same page in relation to this. We'll have to do that. We'll have to do that because there is a lot that we can say. But we'll have to, both as the committee and yourselves, whether it's towards the PRRR or it's when we deal with investigation, when we meet with GCIS. You have your own people in Cape Town. You don't need to come from Palabora or Ladysmith or from Mbokeng or from Tsikaisizwe, which is the Tsikaetu, which is the Kovemba. So there are people whom you can instruct, or if the president herself needs to come, then you can come. So that we move together when we deal with all these issues. Sometimes the telephone is fine, but to be there when we deal with GCIS, when we deal with communication and everything else,
It's a meeting of the portfolio committee. It's a public meeting, so everyone is welcome to be there. But I think the committee it heard what you said. You were saying, heard your frustrations. It's our frustrations. Yes, we are new, but there are people like Honorable Van Damme who have been here. But whatever we can in this term, we'll have to do. Can we stop right there for AIP?
Excuse me. Just before we stop there.
Just hold on. We stop right there with. I'm not sure whether it's AIP. Are you AIP?
Yes, I'm from a Xhosa newspaper, Kizinga, which we.
But what happened there? Because there were presentations here.
I want to emphasize.
Wait a little bit, because we have allocated time. But I'll give you the Xhosa newspaper. We heard a lot about Bukeng and all those places. I'll give you. But the summary is what I've said. The Xhosa newspaper must also submit what he is going to say, but he must summarize what you are going to say. Tell us who you are.
All right.
Based, the Xhosa newspaper is based where, what is it, and all that.
All right, my name is Ed Manglava. I'm from a Xhosa newspaper, the only Xhosa newspaper. When I say Xhosa, the only truly Xhosa newspaper in the Western Cape. Not with the name, which is Xhosa there, then the content is in English. I won't mention the paper. Now, one thing I want to emphasize is what he has just said, the gentleman over there with glasses, the advertising agency. This really hurt ahead from Mr. Trolley in the Western, in the Eastern Cape. He speaks Xhosa, he's a white man. He showed me this, he said, Dizindaba, kutheni lento ungenayo kwiphepha lakho lesiXhosa, and here it has been any Africans in the pampir. Then I said, no, I don't know, only to find that the agency in Observatory never put that, and the people knew nothing. The same thing applied to SASA when they were changing the green cards, the way something about the green cards. Dizindaba never heard that, and the people in Khayelitsha were confused. 2.5 million people depend on that paper, because it's the only one that is in Xhosa. The others are all in English. That's why most of the people there, they pick up all those texts, rep unepotekis with them, because they say they mislead them. What I would like to emphasize is that the minister should be aware of these advertising agencies. They are misleading the government aims. The government will have this to say to the people of Khayelitsha, all the black townships up to Armanas, but put in the burger, all other newspapers, all such things. Can you imagine when you can put in the burger? Do you think the African people would like that? Good names. Only Troy would understand that, and Helen Z. At the moment, the information that we get, which is proper, all right, about time now, it's from with the city of Cape Town, the Drakenstein municipality. Everything they convey in Xhosa, they put it in the Xhosa newspapers. Surprisingly, is what is criticized, the DA. So what I'm emphasizing, these advertising agencies should be watched. They should be seriously watched. They are not doing what the government wants them. The government may, with good intentions, want to do this. That story was about Matigizela in Kingsfield, where there was something to be started, a project about building. But it was on the English and other newspapers. When we investigated the Matigizela department investigated, the ladies there in Observatory only put that in other papers, not in the Xhosa newspaper. Thank you.
Can you repeat the clicks?
I said, you can imagine when you can put Kalu Kika Kala in the burger. It's only it's only our leader in the Eastern Cape.
Okay. All right.
You are
I'm impressed that Mrs. Zille can say Kalu Kika Kala. Thank you very much, AIP.
Thank you.
We'll have to work together on this. So
that by the end of this term, at least there is one or two, three things that we've done at this committee, so that the next group deals with other issues. But thanks a lot. There is ICTU. I don't know where they are, but you don't have to go away. I don't know how many there are, because they must come closer. They must come closer. But the only thing that I forgot to mention is that the committee does advertise this committee. Whenever there is an advert, it goes to the committee.
Okay, thank you so much.
I think we must start, we need to be out of here by 12, by 1 o'clock, so that Lucas can deal with that. At least we are only three. You want to have 20 people talking. You are welcome, and I think we did get your presentation. It was circulated to members, and the document, it was circulated to members, and all what we really need from you is just to summarize the issues, so that and your summary, after your summary of issues, you can then raise what you need us to do, like a way forward, kind of. So that as we contribute, we are also in mind having that. Who's talking? You suppose the meeting is on. So that we can, no, it's not outside. It's those two guys there, the force and the other gentleman.
Force and the other force.
Yeah, so if that can be done, so that we deal with all the issues, but mindful of time. Over to you. I don't know who's going to present, but also introduction. I think you know members. My name is Samir Makuban, who's Kali. Here is Dolashe, member of this committee. Next to him is Kalako. Next to Kalako is Drache. Next to Drache is Van Dam. Next to Van Dam is Van Dijk. And then there is Klose. I see somebody like Honorable Shin there. Yes. The last member of the Honorable Shay. Just introduce yourselves, I mean, it's only two of you. Before your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you, my Honorable Chair, and the Honorable Members. My name is Sipho Manana. I'm from SABC, but I'm the National Media Officer of ICTU. I'm with my comrade here, David Kegane, and Tumile Mateza here. We're here to present to you the issues at the SABC as they happened, and we'd like to thank you very much for calling us to come here, because of I know that I've been sending in emails for us to come and present because of the situation at the SABC. But before my Honorable Tumile Mateza can start present, I would like just to say quickly something as we celebrate the centenary of O.R. Tambo. I would like just to quote on his speech in 1987, addressing symposium in Washington, D.C. He said, "We are committed to the birth of a society in which all democratic freedom will be guaranteed, including those of association, of speech and religion, the press, and so on. We wish to guarantee the rule of law and ensure the protection of the rights of the individual as a fundamental feature of any new constitution arrangement." So with this, we hope that what we brought here will be well taken. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before handing over, pardon me on my ignorance. There is ICTU and then there is BIMAO. As you tell us about yourselves, your relations, and all of that.
In summary, the difference lies in the fact that BIMAO only caters for what they refer to as permanent staff. And throughout the years, there's always been a struggle to say the voice of the freelancer for the SABC has not been heard. And with them not wanting to accommodate the so-called freelancers, hence ICTU coming into the space and is accommodating mostly the so-called freelancers at SABC. I'm saying so-called freelancers because when you look in terms of legislation and how it's done with SABC, they refer to us as freelancers, but in essence, to the core, we work as full-timers, as employees of the city. So in one way, they are flaunting the laws by still referring to us as the freelancers. I mean, for your case, the guy that we represent, some of them have for 32 years working for the SABC, but he's still regarded as a freelancer. I myself have been in the organization for 16 years, and this old topi here, Mr. Mateza, from time immemorial, he has been at SABC, but he's still being referred to as a freelancer. So ICTU has seen that space and taking over the space to create a platform where the voice of the freelancers could be heard, as compared to Bemaru, who has always restricted its membership to only those that are permanent within the SABC. I think maybe,
Chairperson, thank you very much. I don't get used to chairperson because English is chairman, that's English. Chairperson, thank you very much. And then honorable members, thank you very much. I will read my stuff because it's very technical, but I did send you a copy of the stuff that talks about independent contracts, which in my view is a part of the labor relations law in South Africa. Freelancers in the SABC are given a contract called an independent contractors contract, which in all intents and purposes is an independent contractors contract, but the management of that contract is a contract if people are being managed as full-time employees. I will explain that why I'm saying that contract is not that way. It seems that employers are still prone to employing people under a contract that states something like, your status is that of an independent contractor. The contract states further that as an independent contractor, you are not entitled to paid annual leave or paid sick leave, paid responsibility leave, and you are not entitled to be paid for overtime work, and you're not entitled to be paid for public holidays and Sundays. You're also not entitled or eligible for membership of the company's pension scheme or medical aid scheme. And that in a nutshell is the reason why employers go the independent contractor route. But unfortunately, if an employee had challenged the nature of their employment relationship at the CCMA, it would in nearly every case be found that the independent contractor is in fact an employee. We have, Chairperson, we have discussed this with both the board, the interim board, and management, senior management. We have had no success at all. If you go back and check what has happened in this case, there is a precedent, a case law of the Supreme Court of Appeal, where a gentleman whose name is Mackenzie took the SABC to court under the same issue of being called an independent contractor when he was not an independent contractor. In other words, an independent contractor is somebody who, if I have to wash these chairs, I come in, I wash the chair, if I finish, I walk out. Nobody tells me, put that chair back where you found it, remove that chair, nobody tells me, he's supposed to tell me. That is Section 200 of the Labor Relations Act, the basic conditions of employment, which came into effect in January of 2013. And companies, especially the SABC, has ignored that legislation to a large degree to the expense of these people who are seated here. The provisions of Section 200A of the Labor Relations Act and Section 83A do not apply to persons who earn in excess of the amount determined by the Minister of Labor. And it's usually in the case of persons who do so, who do earn in excess of the threshold. Rather than a contract of employment or a contract of service, before the provisions of the Labor Relations Act and the Basic Conditions of Employment Act can be applied, an employment relationship must exist between the employee and the employer. This is another reason why employers go to the independent contractor route, because a true independent contractor has no protection under this legislation. We have a situation where we are employed, we report to somebody, we are told you come in at 8 o'clock, you leave at 4, you are told you come in and you do your work and you report to me, you tell me what you do. In terms of an independent contractor, Section 200A of the Labor Relations Act that came into effect in January of 2015, that person is regarded as a full-time employee. If there's going to be somebody above you who gives you instructions, then you are an employee. This is the thing we are fighting about with management to a large degree. Although employees earning over the threshold, there's a threshold for people who earn as independent contractors, and if you not earn as an independent contractor, that threshold is determined by the Minister of Labor. The threshold amount are not subject to the, although employees earning over the threshold amount are not subject to the presumptions made in the Section 200A of the Labor Relations Act, if such an employee did challenge the status of an independent contractor and allege that he is in fact an employee, the CCMA would still be required to rule on the matter. The other thing that we have found very strange is the SABC reneging on awards that are made by the CCMA and rather prefer to take any award on review or appeal the CCMA decision to, so that the people who are bringing this case to the CCMA or to the Labor Court are not able to access the Labor Court because of funding and other things. The main difference between employee and employer and independent contractor is the nature of the contract itself. It must be determined that what the intention was of the parties to the contract. Was the intention that it actually be a contract of employment, or was the intention that it actually be an independent contractor relationship? The one contract, employee-employer relations, a contract. Sometimes companies do this when they try to avoid to pay tax, when they try to avoid to pay their part of the tax. In other words, the way our tax has been scheduled with SARS, we are paying tax as employees, but we are not employees, we're not regarded as employees, but our tax is paid as employees, and that's the misnomer we're talking about. Where was I now? The one contract, employee-employer relations, the contract of service, the contract of a formal employer, the contract of service. The employee undertakes to render his services as opposed to an agreement to undertake and complete a specific task, as I spoke about that chair, to the employer. Usually, for an undetermined or understated period of time, in return for which the employer undertakes to pay the employee for those services. The other contract, independent contract, I've got one page only. The other contract is independent contract, is a contract for service, and is usually a contract where the contractor undertakes to perform a specific service or a task, and upon completion of the agreed service or task, or upon production of the result agreed upon, the contractor will be paid. That is not the as we are concerned. As I said earlier, we have broached this issue with both the interim board, we have broached this issue with senior management. Senior management, probably through no fault of their own, they seem not to understand the legislative imperatives of the kind of work they are supposed to be doing as the SABC. Many a time we are told that the SABC doesn't have money, but you do not see anything where people try and say, how first? Because I seem to believe, if you are going to go to Treasury and say to Treasury, I need a bailout or I need a guarantee, you must first say, this is what I have done to get the money for my company, for this entity. I can't go further than this. I want you to close this gap. But that does not happen at the end of this year, because I can probably, people know no much, no less, as I do.
I will touch on mostly sports-related issues that came during the process of termination of contracts of about 17 Botswanians and Fidesa. And touch from the process of what has transpired and some of the issues that Dumila has touched specifically with reference to the human resource at the SABC, which is another hindrance when it comes to dealing with the issues that relate to contracts and providing proper advice to management on how to deal with these issues. And I would give even a personal anecdote about what transpired in my case a little bit that relates to the case. I mean, this issue came about from the 30th of June this year when some of the contracts that are related to sport, why the contracts that are related to sport were pushed towards June as compared to other specifically for presenters, was with the reference coming from the 2010 World Cup. That pushed the contract of the independent freelancers that are towards June. So in one way, they could amass do termination of these people because their contract dealt within the same month. During that time, with 3 months to go, with 2 weeks to go, mostly 17 members were given termination letters to be told that their contracts are not going to be renewed and their services are not needed. It was a situation which was taken to the SABC interim board on the 22nd of June at Radio Park. Of course, after a discussion with Matata Sen, who was a member of the interim board. But in that discussion with the board, it was asked, given that the board wanted to deliberate on the issue, and they said that in a week's time they will come back to a committee that was formed to have a discussion with them. Within the week, they came back, and they thus indicated that they agree with the freelancers who came to them, that the manner with which things were done were inappropriate, and that they should all the letters that were given to the 17 workers should be rescinded, and that a process should start, an independent process should start that would look into the matter specifically with looking at how the decision came about to terminate the contracts of the freelancers and the reasons given for that. But however, the management machinery of sports in cahoots with the human resource department, led by the HR of sports, Mr. Siko Maseko, the GM of TV production, Mr. Kelezo Tokanyo, and operation manager, Zakele Sibia, was supposed to act as an independent contractor, basically the human resource, went and came back very much against the grain of what was discussed with the interim board, to say that they were only going to offer all the 17 members a month extra contract as common courtesy, because they are not giving them enough time for termination of their contract, and which of course was something that did not sit well with us and was not even in the grain of what they was discussed with the board, who had already indicated that those letters should be rescinded without prejudice, and that was not implemented. But the one thing about the board is that the board, wrongly or rightly, they referred the matter back to the people who implemented the decision in the first place, and without really wanting to be seen to be influencing the process, besides just giving the directive. And then for me, I found it to be very wrong, because then if you give back to the very people that have cast the people aside, you are therefore saying that to them that they still have got to act as a jury, whilst you've said that their process was wrong, and because of that, they found this loophole of saying that they're going to only give people a month's contract as common courtesy. I mean, some of the people that were affected, Dimile Mateza, Kudu Amankwali, Danik Benz, Christoph Wong, some of them have gone through hardship during that process. I mean, a guy like Lindane has been in hospital. A guy like Mzimase Mgelisa died because of this process. He had an impending case with the SABC, which was never there, that involved a situation with Orlando Pirates. And after that, he said it's sorted, he must come back to work. And he was never scheduled. So he couldn't work because he wasn't scheduled because of the situation. And 7 months later, with stress and everything, his kidneys gave in and he died. He was buried. A brilliant journalist, somebody who loved his craft, has already passed on. Now, sitting on his deathbed is Tebo Manyapiri. Very soon, we'll be reading about Tebo having died. He's done multiple operations, because with stress comes everything, and it doesn't stop there. There's more that are going to come. The life of Fanny Madiba, African man, you know, Sylvester Ndaba. And there isn't any reason besides personal issues that are forwarded about what is being done. Sometimes you think that even the management people at SABC are in cahoots with oppositions to really devalue the programs that are done at SABC, so that people should continue to migrate from the public broadcaster to other channels. And you don't know what they are getting in return from them because of the actions that they take. Actions which, of course, when you are to deal with issues and change programs, there's a lot of processes that are followed. The process of debriefing of the show, the processes that have got to do with market research of the show. Some of those elements are not even part and parcel of management in terms of taking decisions to change things at the CBC. They just decide off the cuff to make decisions and say that they are changing things without really having been able to explain themselves about what the decision are taking. And they've used the issue of the SABC's financial crisis in order to force through the issues as well. You have to look in terms of during the very same process. I mean, the likes of Robert Marawa, who a seasoned journalist who has done very well, his program and numbers have always been growing, but he was affected by the very same thing. And he brought sponsorship to the program, and the sponsorship, the sponsor had to leave because of the situations that was created by the management. And then they say, no, but again, the sponsor had to leave, but they created the program for him. I mean, but in return, we've seen a situation where some people are brought in to replace the very same people that are being fired. I mean, the livestock for Mark Lewis from Radio 702 were employed, and Udo Carlson, at four times what the guys were paid. I mean, you'll be told that the guys are earning such amounts from the SABC. And I can tell you on record that Robert was making about 20,000 from his show, and Udo makes 80,000 per week. 80,000 per week, already they've now amalgamated issues and put other things for him to say to justify what he's earning. And they say, but Robert, who was doing that show at that amount for 70,000 a month, now they say, no, he was being paid a lot. And these are the fallacies that they continue to purport, and even to the public, that this is what is happening. But when you look deep down, you find that there isn't the truth as far as these issues are concerned. I've already touched the issue of etiquette, of rebriefing and things. The other issue which I needed to tell is there has been impending issues that are, or have got legal implications at the SABC from issues of for people who have got cases at the SABC, that the GM of sports, Klaus Tuchel, has really swept them under the carpet and has not really dealt with the issues, even though people have come to her and indicated and given evidence against such people. It's people like Manfred Sedler, who was double dipping at the SABC, but those people are not dealt with, including the impending case of the Brazil Olympics, where there was issues of fraud, including selling of rooms by the very same management who were in Brazil. But those issues have never been dealt with, although people have come forward to say, we know about the issue. And they made a mistake when they were in Brazil to send SMSs to two groups. And you know, the Lord works in different situations. There are two groups, one of management and the one of general workers. And having discussed the selling of rooms in their management group about how much they're going to sell rooms, and she had forgotten how much they said they were going to charge, and she put the question in the other group to say, oh, how much did we say we are selling the thing? And then the silence really told her that you have just made a mistake and put it in the wrong group. Some people like Mpoma Boy are benefiting because they threatened and said, we're going to show the SMS. And these are the issues that we want within the SIU to investigate, because it is the money of the state that has been used and misused. And even during the time, I mean, how the management bundled that Olympic budget, booking rooms, and then canceling people with 2 days to go to the Olympics. Huge sums of money of the SABC was wasted during that time of the Brazil Olympics. Things that need to be to come out into the open in terms of what transpired during that time. You know, it is difficult to describe the SABC as having a proper functional human resource that evaluates issues properly to advise both management and workers in an impartial manner about their right to avoid tedious legal battles that are unnecessary and increase funds of both the organization and the employees alike. Old school mentality still reigns supreme with the leadership style of management at the SABC and equally human resource. No wonder things don't get better as purging and firing of workers continues to occur with impunity in the organization, even 23 years into our democracy. The management and human resource are always in cahoots. There isn't a situation where you find that human resource really look into the issues. And here I want to look in terms of the issue of myself. I went to HR and I wrote a letter by my legal people, and I said, how therefore do we deal with the issues? Now with my contract, you have cut my contract in half without consulting. And secondly, you have not indicated what is going to happen with my contract. And my shifts have been cut in half. What are you doing? Instead of coming to me and saying, okay, we are going to negotiate, they use the state money to say, no, we're going to challenge you. And beyond that, we're going to terminate your contract, because now you are coming forward to saying what is happening. I'm saying 16 years I've been working on with the organization. I am not a freelancer any longer. I'm an employee of those, and I can indicate why I'm saying I'm an employee. But instead of human resource looking at those elements and saying, how therefore do we look at this issue, and how therefore do we empower our human resource, and including the management, to deal properly with the issues without really going into a fight, as compared to just going into a fight, in a more open way of dealing with issues. They decided that they're going to terminate my contract, and I would therefore have to suffer going through the CCMA and of course the legal process. And because it will take long, it will drain me financially, that is the process that they will do, because the SABC has got funds. And there's a lot of cases that are happening at the SABC like that, where the legal department just continues to, like Dumile said, to challenge cases, and they know that they're going to take time, and they think that you will run off out of funds and not be able to deal with the issue. In conclusion, I will send it to you. I've attached even some of the issues that we've sent to the previous Minister of Communications. She seemed very willing to deal with the issue and of course to speak to the SABC. Unfortunately, whilst we were about to have and maybe a meeting that was going to be long-lasting and make a change. She was shafted and shifted. On the same day the day before we were supposed to have the meeting at the SABC, she was moved. So the issues we forwarded to her, and we hope that maybe the new board also and including the new minister might carry on as far as negotiations with the SABC on our behalf in this matter. But some of us already, I've gone to the CCMA, and the first process has already passed. Now I'm in the second part of arbitration, so we'll be going through arbitration as well. 5 months later, still fighting for our cause.
Do you have another issue?
Mr. Manana will deal with
other
issues.
But you are saying you'll head over that?
I will. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, the issue at the SABC, I think, is why they don't want to let go of freelancers is because of they exploit people. Freelancers are being exploited at the SABC, Honorable members. Every time there's a financial crisis, the freelancers are the first culprit to cut their hours, even without thinking about the impact of this issue. I've raised it with the previous management, and it was said to me that was inhuman for news management to cut hours of people. But the thing is, if I came to a JCPC and work 8 hours, then the following year I'm still sitting on the same desk doing the same job, and then I'm getting now 7 hours, which is this thing impact on my salary. Instead of them, because of they are cutting the 8 hour to 7, because of they don't want to convert people to permanent, because of if you work 8 hours and 40 hours, they will be permanent. So people have been doing that job for a year, which is past that 3 months that the labor law says that if after 3 months that person is still there, that person must be permanent. So now when there's no money, the freelancers are the ones that they come to, and then they dip in, and then each one they do this with impunity. They don't care. Especially HR. I'll start with HR. HR at the SABC is a problem. Even in news, sports, handy, everywhere, radio. Case in point, there was a lady in radio, Channel Africa, who she came to me. She said that there was a sexual harassment from the manager. And then when she refused those advances, the manager said, "You think you're clever, I'm gonna cut your hours and I'm gonna cut your shift and I'm gonna get someone to come and work here." And then she reported that today to HR. But HR never investigated that issue. What HR did, they called that manager and then sit that lady and said, "What's happening?" And then the lady said, "Now I don't get shift because of I refused those sexual advances." And then the manager got someone else to come and work with me, but that person is getting more shifts. And then I work only 2 days in a month, or sometimes I don't work for 3 months. That lady is working. So if HR would have investigated such a serious accusation of sexual harassment, all they said to the manager that, no, draw a roster so that there's equal shift. How do you say draw a roster? They want sexual harassment accusation. And you can see the way the lady's got all the emails. So she came to me. I took her to Tandega Kubule, the one of the SABC, to say, "Please help this lady, because I'm a freelancer, so can you please take this issue up, because it's a serious accusation for such a corporation, a government company, to just let such an issue just slide." Because of HR, it's no more human resource at the SABC, it's manager's resource. Everything that the manager does, whether the manager abuses you, victimizes you. I remember, I don't know if some of the members here, they were there when the interim board was there during the division, during the round. I stood up and spoke and said that I'm being victimized. They said that I talk too much and I'm a freelancer and I don't know what's going to happen. And definitely I was victimized. I was pushed aside. My contract was never renewed. I had to fight to come in.
I'm looking at the time. I understand the, because I think you speak from experience.
Yes. Can I? I just want to say touch something from employee relations.
Yes.
Quickly. Employee relation at the SABC. How can workers take the SABC to CCMA? They don't investigate because they are the one who represent SABC at CCMA. People who should take the SABC to CCMA are the service provider if they don't get paid their money. But workers, that should be issues that they must look at the core issues of why these workers are not happy and taking the SABC to CCMA. That's employee relation. But they don't do that. When a dispute comes to them, they voluntarily go there because of even these managers, they do this. Why they do this? Because of they know that it's not their money that pays for all the court cases. Last, I think when James Aguman, the diplomat, presented about this, he said that the ACPC have 100 million for court cases because of people always take ACPC to. Why? Because of the way management, HR, and ER, they are doing. They are exploiting people. So I am glad that you've managed to solve the hate, that everything is messed up at the hate, so you've tried to stabilize it. But down there on the grassroots, workers are being exploited, are being victimized day in and day out. Would like if the honorable members can send in maybe a public service commission to investigate HR, investigate ER and all these managers down there. People are being victimized. They come to work not happy. Like, for instance, I'll say, somebody, colleague, a female of ours, she got a baby, she gave birth. 7 days later, she came back to work because she's freelancing. She can't stay at home, she can't bond with the child because of these contracts that are unlawful. So, and she's been there for years. So, that's what the core issues that we bring to you, that these contractors are violating people's rights, are unlawful. So if you could at least let people have fixed them, so that if I would have a baby, I'll go to maternity leave and all these things. People are being exploited just like that. Thank you, Honorable Member.
Thank you.
Thanks, gentlemen, for the presentation. Yeah, we have 10 minutes to go, members. We have 10 minutes to go if you have some questions. Because I think the presentation or the submission that you were making, if you can get the details, it will be easier for us to. I see this one, the one that we received, but Mr. Matheza was going. But there are other issues that affect individuals, like yourself, the one who just spoke. But also, I mean, if it's international, what is it? International? It's what? The union. Because you see. I know it's ICTU, the union, their relations with management, the management or employer-employee relations. And when you are in a union, you deal directly with the employer. You fight your battles with the employer. That is why earlier I wanted to know the relations between your union, BIMAU, there is also
CWU.
Yes, there is also MWASA, and I think these are all recognized unions by management.
No.
ICTU
is not recognized.
I know MWASA is recognized. Mr. Matheza is giving clarity that
no,
we are not.
MWASA was
derecognized.
Yes, you this time. MWASA was derecognized in favor of
CWU. So ICTU is not
ICTU is a new institution. It's not recognized yet. So you don't have a bargaining arrangement with the management. So it clarifies the issues that we raised. Honorable Plassen, you wanted to raise a question? Because that's the clarity we must, so that we don't deal with parallel issues. Us dealing with you, but at the same time you deal with the management and the board. So there are those issues that we must be clear about before we engage on a number of issues. ICTU is not recognized, therefore they don't have that status with the management of SABC. But as freelancers, surely they have a relationship with the board, just like you have relations with us. Honorable Plachin.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I also just wanted what they presented here to get that in full as well, to go through it, because it's not the full information. It's really sad that, you know, we're a caring government. We are a caring government, and we put laws in place to protect our people. But people working in entities like the SABC abuse those laws, which is meant to protect the workers. So I'm hoping that this committee can investigate, you know, that properly. The reason why I'm saying this, you know, things that are happening, money is wasted. You know, that affects vulnerable people. Because Deaf TV, DTV, has been cut. There's no access for the deaf because the program has been cut. The staff who work there are also treated badly. Nobody speaks for them. They're too scared to talk. And then on the other side, you know, the Paralympics, the disabled Olympics, the Deaf Olympics are never shown on TV at all. You know, I'm too embarrassed to say that on Facebook and social media, but because of the mess that is happening within the SABC, I sit with DEFSA, the Deaf Federation of South Africa, and we see and read the mess on SABC, we get more worried, because the deaf community who pays TV licenses will never get full access to all of this because of what is happening while we are waiting. I think I've been talking about this for 16 years, the same thing, access for deaf people. I can't brag overseas, because if our own public broadcaster says nothing to support the deaf, there, you know, it's peanuts we get. That's the one thing I wanted to say. And then I also sit on the Public Service and Administration Committee, and I will make mention of this to the committee, sorry, to look at HR issues that are not correct, that NGOs and other small companies need to look at the human resources of employees, while a state entity, you know, things like this happen in there. So it's not correct. A simple question I have. You said independent contractors are not permanent employees. But now my question is, do you get IRP files every year from the SABC? You get that, and yet you are not regarded as permanent employees. So I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, gentlemen. How I wish your dedication was balanced. It's such a pity, Mr. Martin. However, because I was part of the delegation that visited your headquarters, and in there, I met very young, brilliant, and very brave. Some quarters you might not be relevant in raising your issues, and people might not take you serious because you need a lot of education yourself. Chairperson, we all know, and very much unfortunately so, the bad story about the SABC. And as such, I think the gentlemen know how committed this change the dynamic. I think there shouldn't be any one moment that you think we are very happy with what is taking place in the country. I get to hear your issues, very personal issues, in a very detailed manner. But if you can get a report written to you, but also that must speak to those unions, for instance, that are not yet recognized. What are the processes from your side? Because remember, that must be done by yourself first, and you work then later with your employer. Because the chairperson, we have just appointed a new board. We don't want to be seen running issues, day-to-day issues of the city. Because it would be unconstitutional for us. We really would want to hear from yourself in a detailed manner. What is then the response of the new board in your frustration? Because see, we don't want to come and lie here and create an impression that having had all this, then next week we have resolved all this. We would want to get a proper a report that tells us which route did you travel, and we must also identify later on your frustration, so that we can be able to come in a smarter way to say, they put all this before you, time frames and stuff. Today you have not responded, and then it's a problem. So I would really want to hear that your message, because I don't want to consider anything beyond the new board, because we all know the turmoil that was in this industry. I'm putting my trust into the new board, and I would want to hear. I don't know. I don't underestimate the frustration that you went through. In fact, I would want you to make sure that you take every board you have done anything wrong to them. We were there, we got reports that some of us, you thought, is it 2017 or is it 1957? Because what you got there is something that we have never heard of after the liberation of South African people, where you are told to get there, you get to push in the window, and you land in a dam, and so on. Those are the things that you're reported that you got to hear from the SAPC staff. So I don't want you to, in one moment, think that you are we are not aware of those things, and we want you to know that until the last person pays of what he or she did in undermining the laws that govern this country, will be the happiest community. So there is just no way that people can be treated like you had at the SAPC headquarters and like we hear from you. So I really want to say to them, if the gentleman can take their report, take it back, give us any details. Even the recognition of the union, the management have a role to play. Did they play their role? If no, what are the problems? So that you can pin the board down to say, this is what was expected of you, and you did not play the board. And then as a committee, you have a right to come in, and when you touch something, it really produces a change, I can assure you. We know there were committees earlier on, everybody tried, but this time around, we are very committed in making sure. Because the SAPC is SAPC, and it is so important for all of us, and especially after Honorable Zaha and all the things that she's saying, all the time we got so embarrassed when we got to hear the details of what things, horrible things that are taking place in the SAPC. So I really want to suggest that let's get that. And I'm sure your office will be willing to want to get that report, so that by the time we meet with the board, because we'll be meeting with the board for the first time, we're able to bring those things into their attention, so that we can quickly take the matter on and it must just run. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's quite urgent because we're meeting the board next week. Honorable Fonda.
Thanks, Chair. I think we've run out of time, and I think I would like to associate myself with what Honorable Damashe has said. I think it would be difficult. Well, let me first say that I appreciate that you're going through a really difficult time. It's terrible that the staff that have worked at the SABC as freelancers for decades, and they don't get medical aid, they don't get the basics that an employee is entitled to, maternity leave. It's really, really terrible. Mm-hmm. But I think it will be difficult for us as Parliament, as this committee, to give an instruction to the SABC to say, you know, convert all contracts immediately to permanent contracts unless we hear the other side. So I think we will raise the issue when we meet with the board next week. But I also think from your side, go through the process of getting recognition. I mean, there's a new board. I'm hoping that they will be open to listening to what you have to say. So go through the process of getting recognition. Go through the process of bringing your case to the board. And then we will do what we can from our side. But I think a lot of it will have to come from you. But to say, again, thank you for coming today, and I really feel terrible that you're going through such a terrible time.
Yeah, no, there are other hands. By the way, you don't need to wait for the recognition to raise your issues with management. That's the process of... that process leading to recognition of a union.
Mm.
Honorable Ndoze.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also think, I also thought we must express our recognition of these difficulties. You see, it's a very difficult situation we find ourselves in. The priorities as well of government, I don't know that we want to create false hope. And we have to be sharp and critical and not sweet talk each other. There is a problem of resource allocations in relation to state entities that shows you in a way where the priorities are. But also it's a blame that must be put squarely on the thinking that has informed the ways in which state institutions have been run. It's not just in the SABC, the issue of these contracts. It's everywhere where people with the much more marginalized working class, you all know, it's a precarious labor contract, wherein when we celebrate jobs in the country, we're celebrating temporal workers in pick and pay, temporal workers in the security sector, temporal workers who don't have the basic benefits, who don't have the guarantee. They can't even walk in a bank and have a conversation with the bank because they can be fired any day. And I think that my analysis, as I understand your argument, is going to require a change of attitude in relation to those who are running this country. Secondly, it's these bailouts. You would think, someone's going to hurry and after the stabilization, look at what the SABC goes through, a proper investigation, the reconstitution of the board, all those things. There's now a clear path, blah, blah, blah. And it's not giving money to bail it out. So that it can save itself, save yourselves, and so on and so forth, give you permanent jobs. No, we go and put money in SAA. What I'm pointing out is that we are dealing with a much bigger problem of the leadership of South Africa. And when we present the critique, you leave out those important details of being critically sharp on the leadership of the country. It's not about whether you are anti-EFF or pro-EFF or ANC, but we have to be critical and speak properly about what exactly are the problems. Is that we're having a problem of the leadership of South Africa that is not taking seriously the stabilization of government entities. And finally, Chair, I thought that it was really insightful, all that information which I agree with the honorable members that let's try and raise it with the new minister. Hopefully she will raise it before she is in a reshuffle or I don't know. And then let's raise it with the new board. Hopefully they will raise it before there are mass resignation amongst them as well. And they'll be able to fix the situation. We stabilize things, decisions are taken to undermine that stability all the time. People don't finish a course of stabilizing institutions. It's a serious problem. That makes it difficult for us to place demands, monitor demands, and so on and so forth. And so I think, in as much as we are making these promises, you have to be told the truth that from our accountability part, it's very difficult to keep the consistency of holding those people accountable. Because tomorrow it might be another minister starting from scratch and not knowing what is ICTU, not knowing what is an independent contractor, and they have to be re-educated and all those things. Very, very, very difficult.
Okay. Just 5 minutes. Just 5 minutes. We still have to deal with the CASA. Until 1:30.
Yeah. Quickly, there was a question around IRP funds. Yes, we do receive IRP funds. Yes, we do receive IRP funds, but these IRP funds are not those of independent contractors or freelance. We are treated as full-time employees, and we don't know what rate are we taxed at as a result. The other thing, Chairperson, we understand, ma'am, you have given us a board I've heard there's a disjunction between the board only started last week, and we had dealt with these issues with the interim board. And unfortunately, management is not sitting down. Management is acting on the threats they've been saying, culling, especially freelance workers, because they say they need to cut down on the spending. But the spending is not done the other way. It's done the other way. For instance, if you, after the budget speech of the midterm budget speech, the head of news was here and asked what is she doing, because she's not a functionary. What was she doing here? She went to New York. What is she doing in New York at the UN? What's she doing there? The other thing this committee has not done, the senior management of news were called to the presidency. And you ask yourself, why is senior management of news called to the presidency? And nobody raised an ire about that. And we said, when we asked them, they said, no, we have to bring the president. The president is the minister here. We should talk to the president. Why are you going to the president? And it is this committee's function to ask that question. The other thing, Chair, is the SABC still has a relationship, a very strong, big relationship with SEP, SAP, SEP, the company that is involved in this. And what that company does for the SABC, it tracks the employees of the SABC. And when you reach retirement age, they cut you off the system cuts you off, and you are cut off the system then, because we have these problems Mr. Manana was talking about with the Human Resource Department, there is no exit interviews that are done with senior management. As a result, a great deal of institutional memory is lost, because people go and sit at home and say, I live on my pension, therefore, it doesn't matter how many years you spend at the SABC, at least you know you have institutional memory. Therefore, it's an industry where we should not lose institutional memory, but we lose institutional memory as a result. And that is why, when you go to the SABC to investigate how far the SABC is with implementing DTT, you might find the SABC has not even started, because they don't know which way to go. And that's why they're bringing those consultants who are consulting for Saudi, saying to you, this is how this DGT thing should pan out. And as a result, we're nowhere near. We haven't spoken about a bouquet. SMS does have a bouquet. ETV has a bouquet. We don't have a bouquet. We don't know what are we going to put on those channels. We, to answer that question earlier by this honorable member, my apology, I forgot his name, around Parapigi, the Paralympics. The problem is, you can't have Paralympics when you have a channel like, when your channels are constructed like those of the SABC, because the channels are all things to everybody. You need the SABC to move swiftly and quickly to develop a bouquet where you are going to have a sports channel, a news channel, and put all your soapies onto one channel so that you can cater even for as the broadcasting access, the SABC stream regional channels, to be able to cover your provincial legislatures. Your provincial legislatures hardly get any mention on television. Hardly get any mention because of the ineptness of the management that we are being served with. The fact that we do not have people who have this institutional memory of how things should be done. For instance, we're sitting with some small radio station in the Eastern Cape that is about 25,000 listeners. I'm saying, why should we keep this thing? Why don't we sell this thing with the former Radio Sky, what is now called True FM? We're sitting with, I think, only have 25,000 listeners, and nobody listens to that. And we are saying we don't have money. Why are we having this huge building that we are owning, both the Radio Park building and the other building, and the building at Seaboard, and the building elsewhere? Why, when we say we don't have money? Why is somebody not sitting and say, we need to cut down here so that when we go to Treasury, we say to Treasury, this is what we are doing. This is what we want you to do. This is my problem. That is what we're
sitting.
Finally, I'll give you only one issue.
So quickly, David. For instance, the BMAO and CSW are threatening to go on strike. What management is saying? We're going to keep TV going. They rely on these people. They're going to force these people to work to keep that TV going. And these people have taken a decision. They will also allow the TV to go to black. They will also allow the TV to go to black. They are not going to be used.
To add to what Gideon said, another impending issue, which of course the current board will have to delve into, is the issue of the sport archive materials that was sold Hamas to SuperSport. For a pittance, if I may say, and that is the revenue that was supposed to be assisting in this matter, because you can't really quantify the amount of the archive that was sold to SuperSport, because it's years and years of archive that could create a lot of problems for the SABC and generate a lot of income for a lot of people in the SABC. That, sadly, was just given to SuperSport. And if the current board does not delve into the issue, that's another big issue that will take away revenue from the SABC. And that is critical, that SABC Sports recovers that archive material that was sold to SuperSport.
That's what they say. You remember I said when you give the details, you must also deal with solutions. What you are saying is part of the solution.
That's part of the solution.
Let's get that.
Yes.
We don't have time. Yes.
Oh, the ICTU, they did have a meeting with the HR. But what HR needs, it says it needs a list of members that they have, that they are claiming to have at the SABC. Now, that list is freelancers. And contractors of freelancers are coming to an end in March. So now they are scared that they will drag on recognizing ICTU and victimize these people who are leaving. So that's the issue. And the other issue is that there was a merger between Henley and News. And Henley, honorable member, it's the cash cow of SABC. It's supposed to make money for SABC. If you go there, it's nothing. The studios, it's
8 studios.
Yes, 8 studios. Only 2 studios are working, Generation and Mumbang. All these other studios are down. And in December last year, they took 15 million because of this measure. They took 15 million from youth to Henley so that Henley can run their things. Because of Henley, there's no more money. And yet, the mandate of Henley is to make money for the SABC and rent out studios to the people who bring in programs to the SABC. Now, people, what they do is they go outside, rent studios, only bring a tape to the SABC to be played at the SABC. Yet we've got studios like Henley that is supposed, these guys are supposed to come and rent there. And there was, I don't know if you know that, previous management, they spent, what, 6 million paying artists 50,000, which was, what, 120 artists. They gave them 50,000 each, yeah, which is amount to, yes, that man probably came from Henley. Because of now Henley is down, it's no more making money for the SABC. So which is, I wish the honorable members can stress it to say, Henley must make money as a mandate. Thank you.
Again, that detail will have to have such a proposal. It will help us. Because the meeting with the board, because sometimes when you don't have information, you deal with what is in front of you. So if you can have that before we meet these people next week. But gentlemen, thank you very much. I think you heard what Honorable Tolas was saying. If you did things right, I would say, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Kakan, Banana, yes. Thank you very much. I don't think, even if it's 1 hour, I don't think it was a waste of time. I think we got a lot from you. Don't think that you flew all the way for an hour. It does worth it. Yes. So here in Temengos is just a dump every information that we need up of your computer. And then we'll use it. Thank you very much. Go well.
Thank you.
On the FBI,
thank you, Chair. Committee for. I thought we were wasting your time. And one of the things I'd like to mention is to
a number of candidates for ICASA
to fill three vacancies. The process is that we need to submit or recommend to Parliament five names so that the minister out of five can appoint three. Now, we're going to get into that exercise now so that we agree as to who goes to the National Assembly in line with what we did. And at the center of all this is performance of candidates when we interviewed. I hope members still have their notes so that we speak from what we did at that time, not off the cuff. I will just...
Do you have the names of the... Do you have all the names?
I'll just go through the names of the people who... All the people we shortlisted, because we know what we shortlisted. But the people we interviewed, the candidates, if members recall, was Tawekas Mahlathi, Natalie N. Delport, Dr. Mashilo Boluka, Mrs. Nomonde Kongreka Siopa, Mr. Posa Mashangwane, Mr. Peter Kapolosa, Mr. Ruben Mhlalukha, Mr. Thabo Makake, Professor Sheila Umkese Musi, Ms. Thembeka Semane, Ms. Lula Mamukobo, Mr. Ashraf Patel, Mr. Andrew Peto, and Mr. Temba Piri and Miss Kate Skinner. Those are the people shortlisted. But those who withdrew is Mr. Temba Piri and Professor Musi. So we never interviewed those two. So instead of 15, we interviewed 13. And therefore, out of the 13, we need to, from this meeting, emerge with five. And I will allow members to present their preferred five from the process we went through, and maybe start with Mr. Kalako from the African National Congress. Honorable Kalako from the African National Congress.
Chair, I must say the candidates were good, especially female candidates. They were very good. You could see they know the sector. Of course, women were there, men also, but a few of them, to my observation, that were actually good. The first name, Chair, I'll propose on behalf of the ANC is Nomonde Kongreka. Second name, Thembeka Semane. Third name, Lulama Patricia Mukobo. Notice these are females, they were good. Then fourth name, Robin Mhlalukha. And then the fifth name, Ashraf Ali Kasim Patel. So those are the names, Chair, we want to put forward.
Can I have
DA?
Thank you, Chairperson. Our list is Kate Skinner, who is by far the most competent and experienced and qualified candidate amongst the batch. Our second choice is Mr. Patel. Third choice, Dr. Boloko. Fourth, Mashila Boloko. Then our fourth choice is Nomonde Seopa. And then, yeah, there's a double vowel name, I'm sorry. And then the fifth one, Mr. Tembeka Somani.
Okay, Honorable Ndlovu, it's now your turn, my brother.
Chair, we will submit the name of Lulama Mukhubu. Only.
Okay.
Do we go to the exercise of just getting the names that are common? Lulama Mukhubu. Oh, okay. Lulama Mukhubu is EFF and ANC. Nomonde Kondreka is. When Honorable Lose says that's the only name, so it doesn't mean that you are against the names that are tabled by these two parties.
Now, I'm hoping that there's going to be a discussion.
Okay.
Yeah,
I mean,
I don't want to overburden the committee with a longer route there.
Understand. Can we get the common names? The process will be that parties must just talk a bit on this because really we can't do it here. Honorable Kalako and Honorable Fandam and Honorable Ndlozi. You'll have to talk as to what you do, just to minimize other processes. Can we break for 5 minutes and leave you doing this? Common is how many? Mukhubu?
I have
some. Yes. Mukhubu,
yeah.
Kondreka, Semane, and Patel. Yeah. Can you finalize?
Or do you want to
say I'm so calm?
Thank you.
Okay. I'll share with you. What's happening?
Yeah. Because I'm typing all the time.
I'll share with you.
I'm